From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at what's been a wild trading week in Chicago and the Ag Forum numbers released today by USDA for acreage, yield, and price for the coming growing season for corn, soybeans, and wheat with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather. And along the way, I'll tell you about a company that I ran into, a brand new one that pork producers will want to know about at the Pork Expo in Springfield yesterday. It's called Telltale at telltale.net. Ag. Oh, and I'll invite you, of course, too, to purchase your tickets for the Spring Outlook at willag.org or 217-333-7300.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Matt Bennett at agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what's been happening in Chicago. Matt, thank you for being with us. I need to be out of the office this afternoon. So again, no numbers, at least in the way of an update from the CME group in Chicago for the day. Sorry about that. However, things have been moving rapidly as the Russians invaded Ukraine overnight. I did make note that the soybeans had moved to a 555 high in the new crop, and now new crop and old crop are both lower for the day. They were up sharply through midday. What'd you make of the marketplace?
Yeah, and so as you and I are talking, you know, essentially the only thing we see up with corn and beans is old crop corn, whereas on the overnight markets, essentially every contract was trading up the limit at one point. And so you had 35 cents on corn. Beans were not limit moves, but you're talking 80, 90 cents. And so as we look at the current markets, what we're seeing is you made new contract highs, of course, across the board on the overnight. And then whenever the morning session started or the day session started, you all of a sudden started seeing a couple different features. Less contracts were up the limit, and then the next thing you know, we were well off the limit, and a little bit of panic probably ensued. And so, for instance, when you look at November beans, we're currently trading almost a dollar off the highs. It's a massive swing. There's no question that it's not for the faint of heart, but it's one of those moves that will be a good reminder for all of us that as we move to levels we haven't seen in a long time, you certainly don't want to be taking anything for granted with these markets.
I have not talked Gary Schnitke to see what the volatility from this week will do to the premium for crop insurance, though we know last year it was volatile in the last five trading days of February. That's when volatility is set. That was a 0.23. I don't think we had swings of this kind. And yesterday and today and Tuesday are all included. I think the last trading day will be Monday, if I remember correctly. So I guess crop insurance premiums are going to be difficult. You'll have to start to think about that in your risk management plans, especially once you get those crop insurance numbers. Those things could be pretty sharp, pretty high, I would think.
Absolutely, Todd. There's no doubt that your crop insurance premiums could get completely out of hand. That's not to say that we're not going to all go out and buy crop insurance, of course. I mean, that's certainly something that we want to do. But the bottom line is that whenever you have this kind of volatility in the last 5 days of the month, it's just an incredible difference in what you're going to be paying for, especially given the fact that we've got more ground to cover as far as, you know, what these commodities are worth. So, you know, I think that what you're going to find is that people will get maybe look at it in a variety of different ways. There's a lot of different ways that you can, for instance, play this crop insurance game, whether you want to take your crop revenue coverage down a little bit and then, you know, take like an SCO or a county policy, you know, on a portion of your protection, if you will. I definitely want to urge folks to make sure they understand exactly what the decision making is for ARC and PLC with the FSA office, because PLC gives you the opportunity to do an SCO policy, whereas the ARC County doesn't. I am not a crop insurance salesman, but I can certainly guarantee you that the way that we play the crop insurance game has a big impact on how we put marketing plans together in my office. So it's something that we've definitely studied very closely. And I think a producer needs to spend ample amount of time to understand exactly what they're doing this year.
As it happens, while you and I are talking during the 11 o'clock hour this morning, I am hosting, but not in the middle of doing anything with an ARC PLC webinar that Nick Paulson and Krista Swanson are putting on for the FarmDoc team. Folks can find that later today at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu in the archives there for the webinar, so you can see what they had to say about ARC and PLC decisions today. And of course, we'll discuss that along with having you on hand on March the 8th over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, with Gary Schnitke. He'll be presenting on the crop insurance decisions. I know Gary's going to have a lot to say about what can be done given the volatility, the premium prices that we certainly will know by the time we get to March the 8th. So I'm looking forward to having you there, having Gary there. I hope everybody will get themselves signed up. There are two ways to do that. Willag.org. The cost is $25. It is going to be worth the drive this year for sure. And that includes the Beef House meal at the noon hour, or you can call 217-333-7300. USDA on this Thursday morning, as if there wasn't enough already happening, released the projections for 2022-23, or the coming growing season in the United States. These are just sort of projections they use to put some numbers into the S&D tables. They say 88 million acres of soybeans and 92 million acres of corn. $5 on the season's average cash price for corn and $12.75 for soybeans. So there's a lot of risk, even USDA still admitting at this point going forward.
Yeah, there's a lot of risk. I'll tell you what was interesting to me, Todd, this morning whenever I got up and I saw, you know, beans trading up 75 cents and corn trading up 35 cents, is that at the same time we saw that, you're looking at an average price projection on corn for the 23 situation or the 22 situation. Yeah, I mean, you know, whenever you get out here and you start to throw these acreage numbers in here, $5, you know, and I think it was $12.75 or $12.50, regardless, those price levels are obviously drastically under the price levels we're currently looking at, and it paints an entirely different situation. And so, you know, I know 92 and 88, as far as acreage is concerned, you know, it's probably a little more rich on corn than what I am currently using, but you've got to think there's going to be a lot of corn acres with $6 plus December corn. I'm probably closer to 91 and 89 at this stage of the game, but regardless, I'll tell you what, 181 national yield, we shouldn't throw cold water on that. There's no doubt we could have a 181 national yield with the right type of weather. But with all that being said, you know, I'm not so sure that we're going to have a carryout anywhere close, you know, to a 1.9-2.0 billion, you know, carryout on corn. I think that it was a much more bullish picture they painted as far as soybeans are concerned, which is certainly reflective of what our current demand projections are. I think demand projections on beans are going to be phenomenal, but I think that it's going to, as we move forward and we get out past 22, it's going to be very interesting to see what we look at next year, because the demand for soybean acres is going to be so high. But for this year, I've got to think that at this stage of the game, the USDA numbers told me today that producers that are trying to make up their mind might strongly consider, you know, a few more soybean acres, because they're painting a fairly friendly picture from an S&D standpoint.
You and I are also talking before President Biden takes the stage to discuss the Ukraine-Russia issue. I did see, I think that they don't expect to do anything with sanctions on energy supplies from that nation. That would surprise me, I guess. But are you concerned about what impact those sanctions might have? And sort of course, oil could go sharply higher still.
Yeah, anytime you start talking about sanctions on energy, Todd, there's no doubt you could see a very sharp reaction. You know, we were looking at $100 crude earlier in the day. Obviously, the dollar is sharply higher, which, you know, is befuddling to people. I think when you look at the performance of the dollar here over the course of time when we've printed, you know, several trillion dollars, but regardless, it's been an interesting market to take a gander at. So whenever you look at it, whether you're talking heating oil, natural gas, everything, of course, is up. Energy is going to be strong on any talk of sanctions. Now, with all that being said, this is neither here nor there, Todd. My My biggest concern, you know, is that us getting into a conflict. I mean, I've got a son-in-law that isn't too awful far away from where the conflict is. He's stationed in Alaska, and so we sure hope that if we have any involvement whatsoever, that it's a minimal one, and that you know, we don't have any damage whatsoever as far as our troops are concerned. It's a very concerning situation, and I sure hope the Ukrainian people come out of it, you know, without too much death loss, because we've already heard about more than what we need to hear about.
Indeed. We'll say some prayers for them and for the troops from the United States and NATO across the world. Thank you for taking the time with us today, a bit early when we recorded. I appreciate that, and really looking forward to having you over at the Beef House.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Matt will also join us over at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 8th day of March. We'll talk about the price of commodities, crop insurance, and so much more. You should be there as well. Don't wait, because, well, it's just not very far away. At willag.org to get yourself registered, or 217-333-7300, willag.org, or 217-333-7300 to register for the Spring Outlook. The Farm Doc team will be there. The Will Ag panelists will be there. I hope to see you there, too. Up next, a conversation I held yesterday in Springfield at the Pork Expo. This one about a brand new company, Telltale.ag, that's working to help pork producers collect data from inside their barns.
Hi, my name is Angela Green-Miller, and I am the co-founder and president of Telltale, and I wear a second hat as a primary hat as an associate professor at the University of Illinois.
And your job at the university is to do what?
Great. I have a teaching and research appointment in agricultural and biological engineering, and I also have appointments in animal science and the Center for Digital Agriculture at NCSA.
Lots of things happening in your background that are really cool. So engineering, hard engineering in ABE, you do animal sciences, and then you're doing the whole digital world, which caused you to think about things, I think, outside of the university system in ways that maybe the university doesn't provide, in this case, to hog farmers, some information that they might want. Tell me about the process that put you in a space to create a company called Telltale.
The motivation for this startup company is really about wanting to see the science-based information that we're generating in the university setting be packaged in a way that our producers can find value in it. So really that's the motivation for our company. And we spent a lot of time in customer discovery understanding producers and what their needs were and how we can solve some problems that they feel on a daily basis while we build some infrastructure for long-term deployment of this knowledge that can help be more efficient, that can help make their daily lives better, and essentially build more security in our food system.
So you built, for lack of better words for me, a data capture tool that's simple, easy to use, and provides producers a daily log of things that really can help them make decisions?
Yes, and we built exactly the opposite of what we thought we were going to build when we started, because we listened to our producers, and we listened to them tell us the barriers to adopting technology, and so barriers being connectivity and data infrastructure that already exists on farms. You know, we feel that in our urban settings that we're well equipped to connect everything to the internet, and we use our phones constantly, but our producers are not set up for that on many of their farms in the rural communities. The infrastructure doesn't exist there, so we needed a way to overcome that, and also the use of technology by farm staff and ensuring that it's easy to use and it doesn't create more of a pain point than it solves. So those are some of the barriers we had to overcome. And so our approach in our software space is easy to deploy, easy to use, doesn't require upfront hardware and investment costs. And this creates an opportunity for us to deploy our technology in an easy way, and it builds or paves the way for more complex technologies in the future when we've demonstrated the value of the service that we can provide, of the decision support that we can provide.
Let's stay with just the things that are provided by you. So how is it that no hardware
or no hardware investment is achieved. What's that about when you're talking about data points that you're trying to click off in a setting that, well, you've got to mark it down somehow?
Yeah, so our first entry point into the market here is just a move from paper to digital. So we're app-based, and our app works offline, so it has to be set up, connected to Wi-Fi or to a cell service. But once it's on the device, it can be utilized in a space where there is no service, and then the data will upload to the cloud after you're back into a space where there is service. In terms of what we're collecting, we listened to our producers, and they told us the biggest things they'd love to know about is feed, air, water, animal status, and we bring in a little weather forecasting as well. So under one roof, we bring in what we call the big five. And the way that we collect the data is labor, the folks who are working boots on the ground in the barn, they enter the data into the app. We can also tell our producers a lot about their farm staff based on how they interface with our app.
So tell me, those big five, what are you doing with the data that producers were missing?
We capture it. So first of all, is just the very basics of, in the paper-based system, it may be days, weeks, or sometimes even months before those papers make it into a format that our decision makers can do something with them. So that prohibits real-time decision making, and so we digitize it and they can have access to it immediately as soon as it uploads to the cloud. So we close a loop there. We also apply analytics on top of it, so we provide some decision support with recommended action items based on what we see in the data.
So I've got the app open, I'm a laborer in the barn. What kinds of things am I checking off?
Well, we'd be happy to give a demo to anybody that'd like to see it. But we ask both qualitative and quantitative questions. So quantitatively, we grab the things they're already collecting on paper. So they look at from the animal status, animals that are sick, animals that are injured, mortalities and cause of mortalities. We ask questions about water meter reading, barn high temps and low temps. Those are the things that we're already accustomed to getting. And then we also ask some qualitative questions, like what does the barn feel like? Is it comfortable? Is it too hot? Is it too humid? Is there an odor? And so with that, we can glean a little more information than we can get just from what they're currently getting on the paper-based records.
This is the information provided, but what actions do producers take after they get a look at the data?
Some of the things that are common across all of our producers is, number one, did someone go in your barn today? And while that seems very, very simple with labor issues that we've heard about, it really is a question. Did someone go in your barn today? And so we can help answer that. Beyond that, we can more sophisticated with recommendations. For example, if we know there's a weather event coming, we can make recommendations about is your ventilation system well maintained and ready to handle this event? Do you want to change the way you feed your animals because we know there's a heat stress event coming in? And so we can make recommendations based on things that we can predict are going to happen.
Very cool stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your time today. Thanks for chatting with us.
Angela Miller is with Telltale. You can find them at telltale.ag. That's telltale.ag for their website, at telltaleag on Twitter and other places. And you can also look this one up, at Data the Pig, at Data the Pig. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Tenner from tstorm.net, that's T-Storm Weather, now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the global regions that raise crops around the world. Begin for me in South America. Argentina has been very, very dry, though take it that here, closer to the middle to the end of their season, they might get some rainfall?
Yeah, they certainly will, and their growing season has been a little bit tricky in that it was very dry and hot over the first half of the growing season. Then we saw a very large rain event in the middle of January. It dried out for the last 3 to 4 weeks, so they do need rain again. But now we do have rains coming up. We'll start to tap into some decent thunderstorms over the next few days. And we think those will recur within the first week of March as well. And that's because the jet stream is actually lining up pretty nearby the growing belt for the first time in a while. And so as we move forward over the next 2 weeks, they essentially have near and above normal rainfall. So crops that can still benefit from rain, and there should be a lot because it's not that late in the growing season yet, those will benefit, and we think the conditions will be improving through the middle of March in Argentina.
Here in the United States, alarms are beginning to sound, I think, in some of the hard red winter wheat growing regions. What's your assessment?
Well, they've been in a significant drought for the last few months and going all the way back into last fall. Now we're starting to get toward the spring, which starts meteorologically on March 1st, so that's not very far away at all. At that point in time, we're going to need to start seeing some rains, and we're going to need to see them quickly because we won't have the luxury of waiting all the way until April and maybe even May that we have in some years past for some good rains to show up. At this point in time, there's not a whole lot coming up for the next 10 days. In fact, it will actually be very dry like it has been for the last several months, and will also turn a lot warmer this weekend and next week. So some of that wheat will start to come out of dormancy as we move into 7 to 10 days from now. At that point in time, we do have a fairly significant system that's likely to move across the central U.S. This far out, though, the better chances are always to the east of hard red winter wheat, and that's primarily a function of the elevation. As we move eastward into the plains and then into the Corn Belt in the mid-south, the elevation is much lower than further west in the plains, and that allows humidity values to be higher simply because of that alone. And so when these systems come across, there's always a better chance for rain and snow in the Corn Belt in mid-south with this type of system. So we still have to watch it, though, because if it slows down or takes the right path, that's how you get a decent rain in the plains. But at this point in time, the chance for that is only low, and it'll take another 5 to 7 days to figure it out.
On the subject of the Corn Belt, what do you see in March?
Well, it's going to turn wet once we get into March 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. We have this system that's moving through today that's going to produce some rain, some snow, and some glazing across the southeast half of the Corn Belt and then across the mid-south. And then it'll stay pretty dry for about 7 to 10 days, but that same system we were just talking about is going to move across once we get beyond then. And so we're looking for another significant rain or snow event around 10 days from now. But there will be dry weather before we get to that, so it won't be like it has been where we keep getting rain every few days. There'll be a pretty long break here till we get to that one. But we will need to see it start drying out at some point, because by the time we get into the middle of March, producers start thinking about planting in April, and we'd like to see it dry out a little bit because the best planting seasons are always the dry and mild ones.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That's Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather at tstormweather.net. He joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. Find us online and register today for the Farm Doc Outlook that's coming up on the 8th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for $25. You get more than a dozen of the Will Ag panelists. You get most of the Farm Doc team and a great meal from the Beef House in Covington, Indiana at willag.org.